Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Frontier Beyond Fear Blog Talk Radio Program. I'm Susan Laris and Dams, and today I'm really happy to be welcoming back to the show Reverend Christine Green, who had some really powerful things to share with us a couple weeks ago. And today we're going to focus on a different topic than last time, which is the topic of one of her books. The book is called Anatomy of Caring: Insights on Faith from a Caregiver and a Patient. And this book is about Christine's very personal journey in being a caregiver. And I know that what we'll be talking about today will have quite an impact on anyone out there who's currently experiencing an illness or assisting someone with an illness, and quite honestly, anyone listening at all, because you really never know when you're going to find yourself in the position of either being a caregiver or being the person who needs the caregiving. So this is a powerful topic today. And before I bring Christine on the show, I want to let you know that there is a live chat room going with the show today. I welcome questions and comments in the chat, and so please do come in there and talk with us if you'd like. Also, if you'd like to call in today with a question, feel free to call 310-807-5104. Now, just a little bit more on Christine. Christine Green has been teaching and counseling for over 20 years. She's the founding minister of Sacred Heart Ministries, and she's actually based really close to me in the Pacific Northwest, which I've been really delighted to find out because she is a very inspirational individual, and she offers classes and counseling. She supports women especially. Her other book, which is what we discussed last time on the show, which was 2 weeks ago, and I encourage anyone to listen to that show as well. That book is called Authentic Spirituality, A Woman's Guide to Living an Empowered Life. Christine has quite a diverse background in business, education, and in spiritual studies. And as I said, she is an ordained minister. She has been in leadership roles in many locations. She is a member of Spiritual Directors International. She was even the past president of the Portlandia Women's Group, which she still belongs to. And she volunteers for Dress for Success. Now, I will say that I have a personal connection to this show. Just because I experienced, as some people know from this program, the transition of my father a couple months ago. And so I'm able to see into this topic to a certain degree, although I have to say I was out of state. And that's actually a special challenge because the primary caregivers were in state with him. But still, we can often find ourselves in that situation, too. And I have questions about that and hope to ask Christine today also about the aftermath. You know, after, if someone does transition, you know, some questions about that process, which for me will be very personal today. So without further delay, I'm going to go ahead and bring Christine on the show. Hello, Christine. Welcome back.
Thank you, Susan. It's great to be with you again today.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to talking with you again. And as I said, this is a topic that touches so many of us in an intensely personal way. And, you know, I will tell you, I've had other family members who've been through things. I had a family member who went through cancer. So I do have some awareness of that as well. And thankfully made it through, although it was a harrowing time for the family. It was quite frightening at the time.
I'm sure.
Yeah, so I know so many people out there, just like me, we've had these experiences, or I know there are people listening right now who are going through things. So I'm just going to let you talk to launch this. Christine, why don't you tell us a little bit about what led you to write this book, your personal experience, and just give us an introduction to your own journey and how this all came about.
Thanks, Susan. And I just want to bring in some statistics that you were talking about yourself and other people that are caregivers. There's a survey done by the National Alliance for Caregiving and AARP, and they found that 44 million Americans age 18 or older are providing unpaired care to an adult. The numbers are staggering. If we had to pay for this care, it would cost $257 billion per year. So you are correct in saying that this is a topic that is important to so many people. We are all going to be a caregiver to someone at some mm-hmm. point in life. Unless you live in a cave and have no friends and no family, you are going to be called to be a caregiver. So,
you know, it really is astonishing, Christine. And you know, one of the things that came up in my own family is after observing the caregiving situation, people started wondering, who's going to take care of me? You know, like say you're a single adult and you still have family, but they live out of state. When you become a caregiver, wow, it really makes you think about just what's involved. And I probably only got a glimpse of it, but it makes you realize this is an essential part of life, essential that touches us all.
It is. And I understand what you are talking about because I'm in that situation currently that my family lives back east and my sister is the primary caregiver for my parents. And
uh-huh.
so my first introduction to care being a caregiver was through my sister and supporting my sister in what she has to do. My mother suffered a severe heart attack years ago, and my dad was taking care of her until she fell and couldn't be at home anymore. Once she was in the hospital, then they sent her to rehab. Then when they did an evaluation, they found out, well, she needs to be in a care facility. So now
yeah.
she's in a care facility. But I got to see watch my sister and what my sister, the courageous soul that she is, take care of my parents, work a full-time job, take care of her family. It's overwhelming what happens to the caregiver.
And ironically, that's exactly what happened with me, is my own sister, who also works a very demanding full-time job, was in that position. And then also my mother, which is another challenge, where someone is older, and I know you talk about this too, but in those statistics I saw, you know, a lot of times the caregiver is older, and what that then does too is, you know, if this, like my sister was both supporting my mother who was trying to be a caregiver, but it's challenging when you're older. I mean, she's in her 80s and my dad was just over 90, and so you end up supporting both people. And yes, I really felt for her, and you know, I could just feel her exhaustion, utter exhaustion, and you feel pretty helpless when you're out of state. I mean, you can come in to try to help for a while or do what you can, but it's an interesting challenge. There are a lot of complexities to this topic, aren't there?
Oh, huge, because we're talking about people that adults are taking care of their loved ones and don't even understand everything that's involved, and don't understand that there are resources available. There's respite care available. Many times older adults can have in-home care. You can hire in-home care. We are so fortunate in the Pacific Northwest and the number of organizations that are serving adults who are being cared for at home. I'm involved. One of the organizations you mentioned is Metropolitan Senior Network, which is a network of businesses and organizations to serve seniors, to serve those care providers. And so there's many resources, but most people don't know about it.
It wasn't in the Pacific Northwest, but I'm sure wherever you are, there have got to be these resources.
Well, that's the thing I was going to say. We're very fortunate because we have amazing resources here. It's not so available in small towns and other cities.
Yeah.
Where my family lives, a small town in upstate New York, those services are not available. We found one person who was serving the area and doing a phenomenal job. She ended up doing it by herself, and then she saw the need and started hiring other care providers, and she started her own business doing that. There was one person in a community, and so many of these areas don't have those kinds of resources.
And, you know, even if you do, isn't it true that navigating the paperwork can be a challenge, too? I don't know, depending on which type of resource, like if you are getting in-home care, if you're trying to get in-home care, I know that one of the challenges when people are already exhausted, or you might have an elderly person caring for another elderly person, is trying to sort through the paperwork. And perhaps, some of the helpful resources in addition that help facilitate the process advise people on that. I would assume that's what they do. If you have the resources available, they help you to navigate the system. Is that true, Christine?
Yes. Yes. The most important thing is to ask. In every community, there is some kind of senior organization that is either government provided or provided by a local hospital. There are senior services in almost every community that provide, with little or no cost, help or connections or resources to help people. So that's the first thing, is to find the senior resources in your area to see what they have to offer you, because usually they have a newsletter, they have consultants, and then they will connect you to different resources. And what happens, unfortunately, is we don't find this out until you're at the end of your rope, someone is in the hospital or is in care. And so the more things we can be aware of beforehand, the more empowered we are. And
exactly.
The more what I'm working on now is to help everyone have the information, so that if you know someone, your neighbor, your friend, your relative, that you can share that information. Because when you are a caregiver, the last thing you're going to do is have the ability to go search out resources. You have time or energy or mental capacity left to look for these things.
That's so true.
So the more we can know, the more we can share with others. Here's what's available for you. Here's a connection you can know. Here's someone you can call.
Yes. Well, that's one reason I'm glad that you're here with us today, because it seems to be a topic that doesn't get talked about enough. And the more ways that you can get the word out, I appreciate that you've been called to do this work, Christine, because it's important. And I think, if anyone is listening who knows someone who could use this information, I have a feeling all the things that Christine's going to share with us today will be very helpful for people who are in that situation. And I wish I had known. I might have been able to help. I think part of the problem, too, is when you're remote and you're supporting a caregiver, you can still help. I mean, that's probably one of the best ways I could have helped. And now that I, of course, I think about this in hindsight, but, you know, if I get into this situation again, even if I'm out of town, one of the ways you can help as an out-of-town assistant to the caregiver is by making the phone calls, doing the web research,
exactly,
the background stuff, and really feel like you're helping and not so helpless. There's that feeling of helplessness, like how can I support you?
That's so true, Susan, is to make those phone calls, to do that research. My sister didn't have the ability to even stop to do that, but I could do that. I could.
Uh-huh.
I had the time and the energy, so I could go online and find that. I just, while we're talking about that, I have a blog called anatomyofcaring.wordpress.com, and on it I have a list of resources of different organizations that you can click on and go to their newsletters, and they have a wealth of information and resources and tips for caregivers. There's the Family Alliance of Caregiving, AARP has one. I've got, so anyway, you can click on that and find that link, and it links you to other organizations.
Great. And I'll put that up on the show page so people listening to the show in the archive will be able to see that link right up on the page and click on it.
Wonderful.
Uh-huh.
Wonderful.
You know, one other thing that I have found came up in my own situation is sometimes when you're dealing with a caregiver out of state, they're dealing with incredible complexity that they can't even begin to communicate because firsthand it's so much more complex. So sometimes they do get this feeling like they need to do it all because they have all the information, you know what I mean? And so
exactly,
somehow we need to find a way where we can help each other, maybe without having all those details. I would imagine just finding those resources, even if you don't, I didn't know the complexity of what was going on in that situation. It's true, because it was very complex, and just the time to communicate it would have been a burden for the caregivers. So, but that doesn't mean remotely that there aren't more general things, or maybe just asking, can you tell me just specifically, is there some phone call that you need to make that maybe I could make? You know, somehow there, I'm just thinking again of that helplessness that I felt where I was just not connected to all the details of what was going on, and yet I sense there are still many things that can be done even in that situation.
That's great, great question, great insight. What I have suggested many times is that the person caring for the loved one does not know, here, this is very interesting, does not know what they need. They don't
Wow.
even have the awareness to say, here's what I need. So when you are wanting to support someone else, you tell them what you're able to do.
Uh-huh.
I'm able to do some research for you. I'm able to make some phone calls. I'm able to take your loved one to the doctor. I'm able mm-hmm. to bring you some food. I'm able to bring you something that you need as the caregiver, to let them know. Because what is the first thing that happens when we find out that someone's ill and someone's a caregiver? We say, oh, you know what, Susan, call me if you need anything.
Right.
Your brain does not know what you need. You do not have the capacity to say, oh, here's the things that I need. Can you go to the store? Can you pick up the dry cleaning? Can you do this and this and this?
Mm-hmm.
You can't even think about that. So what I started telling people is, you tell people what you're available to do, that you can bring, you can drop off a meal, that you can do a run to the grocery store, that you can make some phone calls, that you're available to talk with, that you are available to stop and say a prayer with, you are
mm-hmm.
able to go to the hospital and be with them. When my husband was first sick, he was a very private person, and he didn't want anyone to know that he was sick.
Uh-huh.
He lived with a blood disorder, so he had different ailments that would come up from time to time. He has a large family that is scattered through, mostly in California, but scattered throughout the United States, didn't want to bother them, didn't want them to know, didn't want to let people know or have people feel sorry for him, especially guys. This is a big thing. They're strong.
Yes.
They're
mm-hmm.
big. They can take care of themselves. So he didn't want anyone to know.
Yes.
Who is at the effect of that is the caregiver, is me. So I didn't have the capacity to say, because he was keeping it quiet, I didn't know how to ask for help. You know, he doesn't want you to be at the hospital, but I sure need someone to go to lunch with.
Uh-huh.
I sure need someone to take me out for a cup of coffee. I didn't know how to ask for that. So I kept his secret. And health is very private.
It is.
His secret. I kept it. But what happened was didn't realize the amount of stress that was building in me.
Yes.
And I didn't know how to honor his wishes and ask for what it was that I needed. I am very, very fortunate, and some of my closest friends and caregivers are listening on the call today. I can't begin to thank them for what they were able to do, because they served me. They were available to talk to. They were available to pray with. They were available. They made themselves available to me on a 24/7 basis. So I was very blessed. When my husband, unfortunately, his illness got worse, when he was in ICU and then he had a stroke, all bets were gone.
Yes,
he was not fully himself, and I didn't care. I called everyone. I had a team of about 18 people that I could call on to come be at the hospital, to bring meals, to come sit with me, to be with my husband, come be a prayer presence with my husband, to do whatever. I had them available.
You know,
so
I observed. No, go ahead.
No, well, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say something that I observed living here, and I don't think it's a problem I'm mentioning. Someone in my local community of Sherwood, Oregon, who was a city councilor, got cancer. It was very severe and did eventually die. And the thing is that I observed, and actually to me this is reassuring, although it probably happened maybe too late, is how the community just rallied around. Now, in this case, we were talking about a public figure in the community who had done a lot of things, but I think the amount of caring and compassion that can overwhelm a family, that can just, it's amazing what's out there in a community, and if only we could all access that. And when I hear your story, Christine, I'm touched by the fact that these people rose to the occasion and probably wanted to do anything they could to help you. And I think I've seen this in other situations. I'm sure there are situations where it doesn't happen, and maybe that's a good question too, is how do you get past that barrier where you allow people to help you? Because that's another little tricky area, because there probably are people all around you, even people who don't even know you that well, who would help you.
That's the truth. We, in our human personality, we want to serve other people. We know
mm-hmm.
how great it is to be able to help someone. It's in our nature to want to help out in some way. And yet, we don't, when we're in the position, we don't know how to ask. So it's really learning before you become a caregiver. And this is an issue I deal with women when I mentor women, is that as a rule, women are afraid to ask for help.
Yes.
We're the first ones to give it, but we don't know how to ask for what we want. And a lot of that comes around that we feel we don't deserve, that we don't know how to ask. We don't want to bother other people.
Yes.
All those things, we feel guilty, all those emotions are floating around. The earlier we can begin to ask for help, whether you ask for someone to listen to you while you talk, you ask for someone to go to coffee with you, you ask for someone to say a prayer with you, whatever level it is that you can ask for, as you begin to do that, you are beginning to develop that strength so that when you really need it, you can call on that. Because you're right, there are people that want to help.
Absolutely. And you know, another thing I have observed, I know a number of people who cannot find a church or a spiritual community that meets their needs. And I'm sure this is something near and dear to your heart, Reverend Christine, shall we say, because I know you've tried to create a supportive space for people in through some of your work. But my specific question here, which is also kind of characterized by what happened in my own family, which is actually even a different situation, where my own parents, because of health issues, had become distanced from their church. They had to move out of their original community, and they just weren't well enough. And my father was not well enough to go to church, so he became distanced from it. Or you could have the situation where you're, you know, a person of any age who simply doesn't have that faith community, because I have seen a lot of support coming from faith communities. If you're in a church, I mean, I guess this is a twofold
yes.
question. If you're in a church or some sort of faith community, what kind of resources are often available there? Because I know they exist. And the second question is, if you're not in one, how is there a way to get more support in that area? Because I always sensed, even though I've seen situations where there might be a little discomfort in reaching out to a community like that, is there some way to cross that gap where you're not actually part of it, but maybe get support? I don't know. This is a trick. This is a tough area for me, but I know it's important because I have watched how faith communities have supported people who are going through difficulties. And
yes.
it does present a challenge if you're not connected to one and don't know how to be connected to one.
Well, so if you are connected to one, all you have to do is ask. If
yeah.
they don't have a specific outreach coordinator that does those types of services, all you have to do is ask. They will rally around you. If you're in a faith-based community, the people will rally. That's who we are as a
yeah.
humanity.
Yeah.
When you're not, you have to ask. So you might ask a neighbor. A neighbor, you may not have a church, but your neighbor goes to a church. Most likely, there's some support within that church that will reach out to you.
Yes.
Or your neighbor will. Or gather other neighbors around. Here's the thing that happens with our parents' generation. They don't want to be beholden. They
yes.
don't want to put people out.
Exactly.
They don't want to bother other people. They only want people that they're comfortable with. Oh, my gosh. When we found this wonderful caregiver to come in to my parents' home and come in and take care of my mom, she would come in and bathe and take care of my mom, she would be willing to do whatever. And she said, can I do anything? Can I make the bed? No. They didn't like the way she made the bed. Can I vacuum? No. So they all these things that she was willing to do, they didn't want her to do.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how you get around that.
Yeah, that's
you know.
A tough one. But, you know, I feel like my own experience, actually I had a recent experience. I am a person who expresses a lot of questions about some principles. And I recently have been interacting with at least one minister who's way more conservative than me. And you know what I have found, and although this isn't a caregiving situation, I know for a fact that that person in a heartbeat, even if I don't go to his church and don't even agree with his church, would reach out to me in a heartbeat to help me if I needed help. And I really feel there is tremendous compassion in faith communities, even when you don't necessarily agree with everything that's being taught there, that if they are really in the right space of love and compassion and, you know, they want to help their fellow community, which is generally true, they will help you. And there is a and yes, it's crossing that barrier, but I think that something that has benefited me is just by establishing that relationship and also being authentically who I am, saying, well, you know, even joking, like, you know, I could never show up in your church or something, you know, or I'm not, you know, I don't really believe, but still creating a relationship within your community where we can communicate with each other, even if we don't share the same faith, and reach out in compassion to one another, even when we don't share the same faith, because that's part of it. And the other thing that comes to mind for me is, what if a person is an atheist and doesn't really have a relationship to any kind of faith community? I'm not sure. I know there's obviously great compassion for that person, but crossing that barrier again, getting to the support, I don't know. But I know it has to do with being neighborly with one another, being able to accept each other despite our differences.
That we have the ability to look out for our neighbors, that we have the compassion, that we know what's going on with our neighbors, that we're willing to reach out. We hear of something, we reach out for them. We see a small favor that we can do, whatever it is, that we begin to take care of each other. Really, that's the bottom line, is we have to take care of each other, is that we have that compassion, that we're able to reach out and care for each other. We're going to see more and more. They're expecting the caregivers to increase by 100. I forgot. I can't find the statistic. By 100%, the opportunities for caregivers will increase by 100% in the next 20 years. That there's always going to be the opportunity to serve someone. We have to develop that framework so that we learn how to reach out and how to be that. I think we can do it better because of social media, that we're connecting in certain ways, but also there's a lot of people who are not on social media that we have to make sure that do not get left behind.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, one thing I was just thinking about, too, and then we'll get to some more specifics. I was thinking about when, I think it's Christopher Hitchens, the very famous atheist, when he recently, he actually died of cancer, but when he was sick, I was kind of observing from afar, a lot of people reached out to him, and not just to convert him either, not that either, that there were people who had genuine compassion and were reaching. Now, he's a celebrity, of course, but the thing is it was demonstrating this principle that you don't have to be on the same page and that we are all in this together and we can help one another.
Exactly.
Okay.
We also mentioned about local resources. You can go and find local resources. The senior organizations, if you belong, any kind of hospital will help direct you to services. So there are, it's learning how to ask, learning how to get out of the comfort zone that we can reach out to others.
Yes.
All of that helps.
We did get a comment in the chat room that I'm going to pass along. Not exactly a question, but some feedback saying, what an important subject we're covering. And also the comment that it's so important to have a discussion with siblings before a need exists. That's an interesting comment, I thought. Yeah, is that if we can anticipate knowing that someday a need will exist, boy, that really makes me think about these resources you are putting out there, Christine. Don't wait. I mean, that's sort of the feeling I'm getting, is that there's no reason for anyone listening to this show to even wait to explore what things are out there just in case you need it. It's a support net, and know what that support net is even before you're in the situation, if possible.
Exactly. That's a really wonderful comment.
Uh-huh.
And it's important for us in our family, if you're anyone whose parents are still around, is to have that conversation as to what is the plan. What is the plan that you would like to have for your care? If you don't have a financial advisor, I highly recommend getting one, someone who can look at the resources and make an evaluation of where, how this person can see what are the possibilities that they could have for their long-term care. There's long-term care insurance that you can get that will provide the means for your loved ones to be taken care of. This insurance will take care of them in some kind of care facility. But it has to be repurchased. The investment needs to be made before anyone gets sick. So it's a long-range plan. So that's it's sitting down with your siblings, with your parents, and establishing a long-range plan. What would you like to do? Do you want to stay in your home, or do you want to be somewhere else where you can be taken care of? We need to connect with a legal counsel and a financial advisor to see what options do we have, what is available to us. The earlier you have that in place, the better.
Yes.
Once you have that, then you can begin to make plans for what the future is going to look like. The other thing is that everyone, don't wait, now is get the legal documents that you need, is to have your will in place, your advance directive in place, your all those things in place, so that if anything happens, it's exactly, your family knows exactly what to do to take care of you. It's
yes.
People find it uncomfortable. They find it's not a fun subject, but it's absolutely essential that you have those things taken care of ahead of time.
You know, I have to say, Christine, having witnessed this, had such an impact on my family. This very thing is that, you know, going through watching what it's like when someone ends up in hospice, for example, and what happens when those advanced directives start coming into play, you don't really realize. It was such an education for me. I had no idea just how important that is. I mean, I knew it. Many of us know it on a conceptual level. Oh, yes, it's one of those things we should do, and it's on that big to-do list in our heads that we seem to never really get around to. But when you witness that, and you really don't know when you're going to find yourself in this situation. It's not necessarily only when you're 90. I mean, it can happen at any time, as you know. And the thing is that I don't think it really hit home for me just how important that is, because your loved one is going to be experiencing a range of interventions, and they may have very strong feelings about comfort and certain things that we can't really even conceive of when we're not involved in the healthcare world. And I know, having observed it, I would want to be able to say for myself, no, I don't want this, or I would want this, or whatever. And we don't think about it in regular life. Like you say, we avoid it. And fortunately, and even in my family's case, those directives were devised pretty late in the game. I mean, within the last, I don't know, few years. And if we hadn't had them, it would have been much more challenging. And
oh,
to think much more
challenging.
And not only that, there can be intervention. I mean, they are downright uncomfortable. I mean, and there's something that a person may not want, period.
Right.
And you have a right as a person to specify what you think is appropriate for yourself, and also to talk to your loved one, like you say, talk to your loved one and make sure that they clearly say what they would want, and work with a legal advisor. It is true. And the long-term care thing is another one. My family immediately, it's funny you should mention that, because that was one of the first reactions when people started to recover from the transition. One of the first thing was within my siblings was, I'm checking into long-term care, you know, even for themselves, younger people, because that's the time to do it. It's cheaper if you buy it when you're younger, and you also don't know if you're going to need it. So, and you don't know at what age you might need it. So it is
exactly.
another thing that came up in our situation too. And I have to say we were woefully, I don't know if I want to say ignorant or just, ignorance implies we knew nothing about it. Well, I mean, we'd heard it. I mean, everyone's heard financial advisors say you should get long. I mean, maybe not everyone, but a lot of people have heard it, but you just kind of ignore it. You know, it's just one of those other things that they're telling you to do. And it's like, well, you know, that's expensive or whatever. And you don't really, it doesn't really hit home until you see the difference in care facilities, for example. What can happen if you run out of money and you end up in a Medicaid facility versus, you know, if you want to be able to specify what can be done. And it is an important topic, and we do avoid it. We avoid it. I know we do, because I personally have. So I'm guilty of that as well.
We do, and there are so many other pressing issues we don't want to think about. That's why it's so important to be working with someone. My husband was a financial advisor, and I learned so much from him and watched how he cared so deeply for his clients and how he made sure, when you see a financial advisor, they're making sure that your retirement, that your years in the future are met with, that the goals that you have, they'll show you how you can get there. And people think they have to have a great deal of money before they meet with a financial advisor. It's not true. You can meet with one at any time, and that they'll help you figure out the ins and outs and make a plan. No one thinks that they're going, no one wants to think they're going to die early. My husband was 53 years old.
Yeah.
And because of his education and his expertise, our will and advance directive in advance. We had that taken care of. People don't know, even if you're taking care of a loved one, when you're eligible for Medicare. Or Medicaid or disability. All those things should be looked at in advance so that you have a plan, so that you don't face it without this information and without the support.
Right. No, I couldn't agree more. I have another question that's in a totally different area, but I sense we may have some listeners who have tuned into this topic and really would like to know about this. What if you are a parent caregiving for a young child, or perhaps a teen child, or, you know, a child who has become disabled? So the reverse situation. Can you recommend anything specifically for that situation, Christine?
I don't have experience in that, but what I know is that you could go online and find there are many organizations for parents that are dealing with specific issues. You could even find support groups, newsletters, resources for the condition that your child has.
Yes.
If you're dealing with some kind of disability or children that have cancer or anything, you can find support if you go online and look for that. So I don't have specific for myself, but I know that there's so much information online that you can go to. And out of finding those organizations, you also find a way that you can interact with other parents that are going through that.
Yeah. What about support groups and things like, of course, generally if you're a caregiver, you don't have time probably to participate. I don't know, but I would be wondering what, I mean, that would be my first impulse is like, would I have time to participate in that? But and yet maybe that's the wrong answer, because it could be that by interacting with other people. And this could go both ways, whether you're a parent assisting a child or the other way around, depending on the illness. Okay, this actually enters into a whole different topic related, is with the specific illness, whatever it might be, no matter what the age, what about those kind of resources? For example, you know, whether you should undergo chemo and which chemo. We went through this in my family with a relative who had cancer at a young age, fairly young anyway, not real old. And there's a huge array of choices that you are presented with. And that too impacts the caregiver, doesn't it? So I would be curious your own experience with that.
Well, the wonderful thing is that we have so much information available to us online. And whatever ailment it is, people are willing to share their experiences, so that you can go online and you can find an organization or a group, and then you can find maybe a chat room. You can find something. So we may not be available to go and drive somewhere to be part of a support group, although I have given talks at facilities that offer those resources for their clients. But when you're not, you can go online and find those resources. People are so willing to share what they have learned about a specific illness, what they've learned about how to cope with it, about what resources are available, who to contact, that people are learn from across the country or from around the world about what other people are doing. So it's, again, it's developing that cooperative, that muscle, so to speak, that allows us to reach out and ask for help. That
yes.
Once we can develop that, that it's okay to ask for help. I'm going to go online and search it. That, or your friend says to you, Susan, I don't have time to do this. Can you do some research for me? Then you could do that for them. But there, people really want to help each other. No one wants to see anyone suffer, and we want to help each other. Here's what you can learn about going through this problem.
Yeah, and you know, the idea of going to a discussion group is not a bad one, because sometimes a person may not have any time at all, and yet late at night, there's that window of opportunity. You're not ready to go to sleep yet or whatever, and you're able to go online and find a group or participate in some group, because that's the way those work, those discussion forums. Now, one thing I will say, just based on even with minor illnesses looking at, always be discerning when you go online. Wouldn't you say that, Christine? You have to keep your head about you when you're researching
absolutely.
Online, because sometimes you'll see information and you'll say, you know, that just doesn't sound quite right. And it often you can feel that. And so make sure you kind of check. I mean, this is a fuzzy area. I mean, how do you know? How do you know the information is accurate? Doesn't it really have to do with putting a lot of resources together? And it kind of, I don't know, it just, the picture emerges, and those things that really don't fit in the picture, you can sense, I just don't really trust that information, whatever it might be. Is that true? Do you feel that
yes.
discernment
yes.
is important?
And a great way to move through that is to have someone helping you do that. Then
yeah.
you have two of you looking, and if one person one person says, "Oh, look, I found out here's a cure for cancer," the other person can say, "I'm not sure about that. Let's do
yeah.
some more research."
Yeah.
So you have someone who can help you with that and be a sounding board for you. So that's what I would say about that. Yes, you're
mm-hmm.
correct that you could find a lot of strange things, but maybe if you have someone helping you research those things and looking for that's helpful.
Yeah.
I had that available for me, is
that's
a friend
good.
who had a lot of information about health healthcare, and when my husband was in rehab, he needed different kinds of resources, and so I was able to call on my friend and say, what do you know about this? And she would go online, find all this information, and send it back to me. And she'd say, here's what I found out, and I can call for you if you're interested in this product or in this service, let me know and I can call for you. So that makes a huge difference.
Did you encounter situations, Christine, where you had to make decisions regarding care, and there were pros and cons, and, you know, you really had to do an evaluation? I mean, I know people have varying degrees as to how much to listen 100% to their doctor. This is a big topic within the spiritual community, for example. There are people who try to integrate advice from both alternative sources and, you know, an MD, and this is a tough area for many of us, I think, is to how to evaluate the pros and cons. I sometimes get a little distrustful, quite honestly, when something mm-hmm. is presented as all rosy and no side effects. You know, they belittle that. I actually respect when the medical profession lays it on the line and says, okay, you know, here's this option, here are the pros, here are the cons, you know. And when you're getting into major medicine, that can be pretty intense. And I will say, although this was many years ago, in my own family, that particular relative actually decided not to do chemo. And I'm not necessarily saying that's what you should choose. So I have to be careful. But it was interesting how that person made that decision. And actually, it was okay in that case. But in some cases, it wouldn't necessarily. I mean, I am actually not going to state an opinion on that. But it is a challenging area, especially within the spiritual community. I know there is a raging debate, although we don't like to talk about things raging in the spiritual community. But it's still something that's very raw. What do you do? You know, because there are people who say, but, you know, this can do harm and it can help and it can do harm and it can help. You can go back and forth. And then if you choose the wrong, you know, Steve Jobs is a perfect example of someone who delayed treatment for quite a long time. In fact, he talked about that, that actually had some impact on him. And yet, there's the other side of it where I've known people who've launched treatments pretty aggressively for something more minor, and that actually caused some harm. So there are such gray areas, and how do you navigate that? And as a caregiver, how do you help the patient navigate that? These are these ambiguous areas, and I'm just curious. I don't know the answer. It's not easy.
They are. You're talking about a huge issue that we would need another time for.
I know. Yeah, I know. We're almost there. Are you here? I better check with you. Are you able to be here for the last half hour today? I didn't ask you in advance because we're near.
Okay,
good. Because I'm sure we'll fill it up here.
but let me address your question from a spiritual level.
Good.
Medically, we would need another segment.
No,
to address
there's no
that.
Way we're going to be giving medical advice on this show either. I mean, I'm addressing what I know is a very real topic where it really is a challenging issue. And yes, let's do get to the spiritual level. How, as spiritual people, do we navigate these waters?
So, if it's okay with you, I'd like to read a segment from Anatomy of Caring from my book.
Yes,
and my
do.
Book is actually a journal for caregivers. I wrote it in the form of a journal. My intention, I think, was going to be to write a how-to caregiver book, and the subject is overwhelming. And by the way, there are so many wonderful caregiving books out there that if you Google, you can find all kinds of books that go into great detail about the things we're talking about today. But what I decided to do is write a journal, because what I saw is the hours that you spend waiting and sitting, that I couldn't focus on reading a book or even a magazine. But what I could do is journal my thoughts. So I created a journal. And this one is entitled, Medicine Comes from God. There are those who are afraid to take medicine, and there are those who take it all too frequently. Lawrence always took his prescription medicine with gratitude. Our constant prayer was that we would be guided to the best avenue for healing. We prayed each day that God's presence was in the doctors and the nurses, medication, tests, and treatments. We thanked God each day for everything provided. And so what it is that we saw that God was in the medicine. We saw mm-hmm. that God was in the doctors and the nurses and the technicians. And that was our prayer, and the prayer with our prayer team is that whatever was needed, that we would do it and that we would be guided to the best decision, how we could be supported. And so one way of seeing it is that there's light, there's whatever word you use, there's a universal energy in everything, so that if we can see it in that, then we know that we're guided to what is ours to do. In the case of cancer, what my husband had, you have to go by what the doctors are saying, granted, you can look at other avenues, but many times to live your life, you need to take what's there in front mm-hmm. of you. So we blessed it. We said, this is what we're going to do, and we blessed it. He had a bone marrow transplant, which is much more serious than even being at a different stage of cancer, where you can make a decision about what I do or don't want. So we surrendered and said, we know that God is in everything, and that we're going to do these things and trust that there's a greater power and a presence in these things.
So
it's
for
a personal,
it's a walk of faith, isn't it? It really is.
I guess,
if you really choose to walk in faith, whatever avenue. You know, ironically, isn't it true, Christine, if you walk in faith, the decision almost doesn't matter as long as you have the faith that the decision is the right one, in a sense.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Is that,
right.
And so it seems that's just a really powerful message that you just shared. Actually, it really addressed exactly the question. And I know that there are people who are guided to other things, and actually they can work. I mean, it's just so, again, but you have to, I guess deep down, you know, somehow, if you're a person of faith and you trust in that guidance, the resources will come your way, and you'll know what to do. I mean, I guess that's really it.
It's developing our faith muscle early enough so that we can be prepared for what we're going to be faced with.
Right.
So we've been talking more about caregiving things. One of the things that happens for the caregiver is a tremendous amount of emotions you have. Worry, guilt, fear, sadness, frustration, anxiety, despair, all these emotions, and that these are, for the caregiver, another layer, so to speak. We're talking about different layers of caring and different layers of issues that come up, and it's another layer that we need to be aware of as a caregiver, that these things are going to happen. What is it that we can learn from it? What is it that we can do about taking care of ourselves?
Yes.
Ultimately, because we are going to be faced with those emotions, what is it that we can do to take care of ourselves?
Yes, and I know I've heard advice where if you don't take care of yourself, I mean, it's so important. This is true even as a parent that, you know, you could end up needing caregiving too. I mean, it's so important to find that opportunity to nurture yourself. And so otherwise you can't be an effective caregiver, I guess, would be one of the points. Isn't that true that if you totally abandon any way of keeping yourself going in some kind of effective way, you can't caregive for very long, most likely, because you will just be exhausted and make it sick yourself.
That's absolutely true. The research is staggering on what happens to the health of the caregiver.
Uh-huh.
The health of the caregiver actually deteriorates, and the caregiver actually loses years off their lives if they're not taking care of themselves. And that was something that people would. Here's another thing. Here's my my writing on that.
Okay.
Unexpected gifts. You need to take care of yourself. After the first 25 times, it was difficult to hear that statement without getting angry. Well-meaning friends didn't quite know what else to say. I tried to explain to each of them, "You have no idea what I'm going through." I was already feeling guilty for the thousands of things that I didn't do or couldn't do or didn't have time for. I heard the well-meaning suggestion as one more thing I should be doing. I learned to take a moment to breathe. I remembered the unexpected gifts that I had received. I felt incredibly grateful to the friends who helped me take care of myself, who treated me to a facial, a massage, or a pedicure. They dropped off bubble bath and body lotion, home-cooked dinners and groceries. They sent cards and letters and thousands of prayers. I realized the bottom line is all love. I am so grateful. God is so gracious.
Wow, that's powerful.
So thank you. For me, what happened was I was so frustrated in hearing people say that over and over again. Well, you better take care of yourself.
Uh-huh.
It's like, what does that mean? So what I want to train people to do now is, instead of saying that, is what is it that you'd like to do? If you want to send a card, send in a card with a greeting card with a Starbucks gift card in it. Send them a little note and say, "I'd like to take you to coffee," or "I'd like to treat you to lunch." Send them a gift card or drop off. I had a friend drop off not only treats but bubble baths for me.
Mm-hmm.
So that the caregiver may not know what to ask for, but we're educated that we could do something for them, that we could help them out with sending something or dropping off something or a phone call or a message.
Yes. You know, I have another question for you. This is going to be a tough one. It's something I've been struggling with, and I'm really interested in hearing what you say to this. And so I have been encountering lately multiple situations. In fact, even talking with that relative who encountered difficulty at a time how do I pose this? Because I know we've got people listening. I'm trying not to be too critical of this particular viewpoint, but I sense that there is a real need for compassion sometimes, because I've seen this come up more than once, where the patient, the kind of support they get is, why are you attracting this to you? Because of the law of attraction. Or an alternative of this can be, you're not praying hard enough, and trying to kind of push the person to be doing something. And I'm also going to state an opinion here, is that I have a real problem with this, because I've seen people hurt by this. I really have. And I've seen them hurt by this both within a very conservative Christian place, where it's all about, hey, you know, you didn't let us lay hands on you, and that's why you're not getting well, or, you know, you need to have more faith, or, you know, it becomes authoritative. Or alternatively, quite honestly, even within more enlightened spiritual communities, getting too focused on what did you do to attract this to yourself, and how can you resolve this. And I'm bringing this up as something that I feel is so important for people in the faith community who either believe in prayer, the law of attraction, or any other thing where it has to do with the amount of praying that you do, or the strength of your intent influences your path, and how do you not be cruel? Because I don't believe, I think there can be cruelty. I mean, I hate to say it, and I think it's well-intentioned. This is the hardest part. I don't think people intend to be cruel, and yet it can come across as very cold and just an added burden on the person. And I have even known at least one person who left a faith community because they were sick, and that was the kind of thing that was occurring. So, again, this is a difficult question, and one of the reasons I'm raising it, and maybe it's just a topic and not a question, is for us all to be aware, so aware, of compassion. And I'd really like to hear how you navigate this particular issue.
Yeah. Boy, that's a whole can of worms. I agree with you. I think what I'm hearing you say is that does not help anyone when you make a comment, when anyone makes a comment saying, why did this happen or why did you create this? Is that doesn't serve anyone. And we don't know what spiritual journey someone is on in their lifetime. I don't know what your journey is about, and you don't know what my journey is about.
Yeah.
Each one of us is on an individual journey, and we will face challenges because it's ours to face in this lifetime.
Yes.
There's something for us greater to heal. Now, this is what I believe. This is, you know, may not be true for anyone, but this is what I believe. So we can't judge that. So to ask that question is very short-sighted, and it is very hurtful. And so that doesn't solve anything.
Well,
what
you know, it's
important?
Not always in the past, too. It can be in the present. Like, sometimes people can really mean well, like, you've got to change your intent or whatever. You know, they're desperate. They want this person to get well. And so they want to tell them, you've got to come to this prayer meeting. You've got to come, or it's not going to, you know, you have to, or you have to shift your focus. And they're well-meaning, and yet it doesn't come across that way. And it actually creates angst for the person. So I want to make that clear. It's in the present, too. It's not just, why did this happen? It's, why is this happening? And how can I get this to stop? You know, and the people give you different ways. And it comes across, it makes people desperate is what it can do. That's what I've seen. It makes them hopeless is what it can do.
What I've learned in my studies is that there are three forms of healing.
Mm-hmm.
One where the condition is removed from the person. The second where the person is removed from the condition. And the third is when the person finds peace in the
yes.
midst of their condition.
Yes.
And so we don't know what is in store for any person. And you know, you and I can't even address what other people are going to do. But what we can do is we can change it for ourselves, and we can change it for those who are willing to listen. But that we do not know the reason another person is dealing with the issues that they're dealing with. That everyone is on their own path, on their own spiritual journey. The greatest gift that we can give them is to be present for them. So
yes.
it doesn't serve. And we want to help. We desperately want to help other people. So we faced the same thing with Lawrence's illness, where people suggested taking supplements or taking this or taking that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so overwhelmed by that because it was one more decision that I had to make as a caregiver.
Yeah.
You know, should I give him these things? Should we take these things? And the fact is, the greatest gift that we could give another person is to be in the presence of prayer. And that it is the hardest thing to do because we feel like our human personality wants to be in the room. Our human personality wants to go and be with the person. Sometimes people who are sick don't want visitors. They want the quiet. They know the quiet is for their healing.
Yeah.
So that rather than go and try to impose our own ideas or our own self onto the person, is to be in the quiet and to be in prayer for the highest and greatest good to be revealed for that person.
Yes. No, I love that.
It takes a very strong person to do that, because our human personality wants to be the focus. We want to be the one who found the cure. We want to be the one who said something that helped our loved one change. It's not going to happen. It doesn't happen that way.
Right. They will hear what they need to hear, because it's not just us. I mean, God is
exactly
with them.
Exactly.
And
the greatest,
yes.
The prayer is, I know that you will receive exactly what you need for your greatest healing right now.
And
that's,
you know, it requires,
what we can say to them.
It does require those of us who are supporting someone who's ill, or even supporting the caregiver of that person. If we're just a friend, if I had been your friend, Christine, when you were going through this, for example, is that somehow we need to be in a sense of peace about, I mean, that seems to be such a, the most important thing is recognizing that, like you said, everyone is on their own journey. And, you know, another place I've seen this occur is if someone believes, for example, that you need to be saved. I mean, and you know, genuinely, they care. Oh, heartbreaking. And because, you know, they're worried about where someone's going to end up because of their belief system. And, you know, I'm only bringing these things up because I know these are the waters that we navigate, which are not always easy ones. The big ones,
right.
The big issues come up, but it seems like your message is, if you're a person of faith, whatever that faith is, put your trust in God, basically, for this person, you know, knowing
right.
that this person is connected to God, too, and that
right.
place your faith in God, that this person is going through this situation as it needs to transpire. And that's what I heard in your message, which I think is a powerful thing.
Exactly. Is if you follow a faith, what you believe is that you pray to what you understand is God, how you understand God, that I know that whatever needs to be revealed for this loved ones, for their highest and greatest good, I know that is revealed with ease and with grace. And that it takes great courage and great humility to set aside our own human personality, to set aside our own attachments to how the world looks, so that we can set them aside and know that there's a greater power for good that is operating in the universe, and that's what we declare. Because ultimately, we have to be willing to do that. When my
yeah.
husband finally said, I'm finished, I don't want any more care, I don't want any more medication, I don't want to be on this journey anymore, he had the capacity to tell me that, and I honored his wishes. And it was later that the doctor told me that he was amazed with my courage, because many times loved ones will say, oh, no, we're going to run more tests. We're going to do more of this, more of that. We're going to try something else. And when he said to me, I'm finished, I don't want to do this anymore, I abided by his wishes and had to be willing to let go, because part of what we know is that our time here on earth is one part of an eternity of life. And so
yeah.
we're here in this moment, but we're going to be together again. We're going to have a connection again. And I trust that. I believe that. I know that that's true. And so I had to say goodbye to my husband. I had to let go. But I did it with knowing that he would be at peace. He would be in the presence of God's love in such an extraordinary way, be free from pain, which was so important to me.
Yes.
That he was in so much pain. I know he's rejoicing and he's free from pain, that he's not here physically, but I feel his presence and I'm aware of his presence daily. And that's how I settled my faith. And for each of us, we have to come to a point of settling our faith.
Yes, you know, I had this experience, even though my father was older, and, you know, at some point you know when you have an elderly parent that you have to let them go, and you know this, but you conceptualize this, but the actual doing of it is another matter. But something really remarkable happened to me right when he died, and I might get emotional because it's pretty recent, is I knew, in fact, we've shared this. My family, we're of different faiths. I mean, I've kind of migrated. We have very conservative Christians, charismatic or Baptist, a whole mix of conservative all the way down to, you know, New Thought to you know, I can't even put a label on what I am, but, you know, it's something New Agey and a different kind of spiritual love. You know, that's all I want to say. I believe I focus on the love and the dawn and things like that. But the thing that suddenly dawned on us that we were all able to share, those of us, everyone has a faith of some sort, is, oh my, Dad is with God. Think about that. I mean, and you can think about this in different ways because we're always with God. But I mean, Dad is fully conscious of being in the presence of God right now. And when that hit me, it was just like, wow. I mean, I don't know how to explain. And it crossed all the barriers. It didn't matter what our faith was, you know, whether they believed in a traditional heaven or whatever, or, you know, I have a different belief. I'm even thinking, you know, he's going to reincarnate. You know, that's my belief system. It didn't matter. That doesn't matter. It's that fact that he, and also that this was his soul path. I mean, I felt that very strongly, or other people might express that differently. This was God's plan for his life. That might be, you know, how someone else might put that. Or, you know, I tend to think we kind of participate at a higher level in that too. Although how is always a little difficult to define. But it was that understanding, and that gave us all more peace. It didn't only give me peace. It gave me wonder. It gave me this connection. And you know, you can conceptualize something like that, but once you know that this loved one is actually there.
Yes.
It's like you are overwhelmed with joy for that person, which was really a surprise for me. That
I'm,
like I said, I'm getting emotional, but it's a good emotion. It's something I would never have been able to explain without going through it. And I sense you probably, and yes, of course, you know, we mourn not being with the person now, and we're still going through that, you know, in the physical level. And I'm sure it's even more challenging when it's someone who's younger. But I'll never be able to quite describe that feeling of the realization and the joy of sensing vicariously this person that I love being with God.
Yes. That's so beautiful, Susan, and what a touching experience that you had. But that's the truth. The bottom line, here's what I see. The bottom line is love. That as a caregiver, we're giving love. As friends of caregivers, we want to give the caregiver love. As friends of someone who's going through some kind of health challenge, the greatest gift we can give them is that presence of unconditional love.
Yeah.
Because we all came from love and we're going to go back to love. And love is what counts. And the more compassion we could have, the more love that we can give, the more that we can share, that's what's going to make the difference in our world. Ultimately, that's what's going to make the difference. That we can see that for ourselves and we share that with each other.
No, I agree. And you know, if we can only be conscious of, the more conscious we are that love is with us now, that we don't even have to wait until we get to the other side or heaven or however you want to characterize it, the more we can get that into our awareness, I think the more peace we'll feel, whether we're helping ourselves or someone else. I mean,
that's
tremendous peace.
Exactly. That's living heaven on earth. When
yes.
we understand that we have this now, we don't have to wait for another time. We have it now. We develop that understanding. We develop that ability that we have it now and it's available to us. That's living heaven on earth. We've collapsed the separation and we experience it in the now. And it can be incredibly healing.
Yeah, I think sometimes healing can surprise us even when we don't expect it. When I think about that whole time of when we were letting my father go, I think about, things happen that surprise me in a way. And,
mm-hmm.
I found myself talking to him. I don't know if he heard me. I sense that he did at some level about these things. Suddenly, even before he transitioned, just all the things that he was going to experience that were all wonderful, and it was as if speaking to him, God was speaking to me at the same time.
Yes.
And then it really
yes.
hit when I needed to really hear it was after he left and it came through really to all of us. And so, And even so, I know we're winding down here on time. Now, I will tell you that when we speak to people in the archive, we can go a little over if we have to because they can still hear it. It's just that the live show they can't hear after. And we're not going to try to go to it. We're going to try to keep this in the right time frame. But
sure.
I guess the one other thing that I wanted you to talk about a little bit is the aftermath, is that if the person does not get well that you're assisting, what kind of, and this is a whole topic of itself, I mean, I'm not expecting you to go into this at any great depth, but I sense it's so important to keep supporting, and I'm sure you got a lot of support. Talk to me a little bit, just a little, about the aftermath of the caregiving process. And can caregivers sometimes feel guilt even after, if is there more they could have done or whatever, and just some advice as to how people can deal with that as well. It's just to find that peace after as well.
That's the whole topic of grief.
Yeah, we may need to do another show. This may be a preview for another show.
It's actually the next book that I'm writing is grief. Because
uh-huh.
of what I see. Yes, the caregiver is going to continue to go through emotions of guilt, of loss, of sadness.
Uh-huh.
You continue to go through all of that. And it's finding the support. Again, it's establishing the support group before all of this happens so you know that you have it. When there's loss, it's so important for someone to see a grief counselor. And I have someone that I am seeing, and I am offering that service to clients.
Mm-hmm.
It's so important to go through that and be able to talk that through, to be able to talk through your emotions and what's happened and how that's changed your life. And many times we don't do that. We think, oh, I can do it by myself. But unless you are working through that, you can work it through yourself. It's going to take a lot longer, and you don't know what ramifications there are. So it is important to have a grief counselor that you can talk to, or a spiritual counselor, someone that can hear you and listen to you, what you've gone through, and to be gentle with yourself, that everyone goes through grief differently. There's no, just as in caregiving, there's no one way that you're going to go through it. In grief, there's no one way that you can go through grief. Everyone's going to approach it differently and have different experiences. It's really important that you don't judge your grief experience and that you give yourself time.
Yeah.
That the time to maybe move away from all of the outside things. I took the time. I didn't offer any classes for a long time. I stayed away from counseling while I was grieving. I
yeah.
took care of myself so I could do those things, and then slowly brought myself back into society with all of the activities that I do and the groups I belong to. I slowly moved back as I felt, and even then I was emotional and tender, and
yeah.
That's part of the process.
Yeah, I guess you just have to give yourself space. And, you know, in my own family sense, we're in the midst of this. I mean, it's still, less than 3 months. So, and we're still finding ways to support each other. And, you know, especially my mother. And, you know, it is a process. And, again, we'll never get into this in this show. But, you know, the other thing that comes to mind, too, is if someone does get well, I've observed that in my family, is that reintegration process is to be sure to continue to support and continue to seek resources there where someone is recovering from a serious illness, may even, although this, well, I mean, I don't know if it occurred or not in my, I've seen this situation where there may even be some disability remaining from whatever the situation was. And, you know, I assume, once again, Christine, wouldn't you say there are resources there too? Keep looking for your resources, even,
exactly.
You know, in the outcome where the person recovers as well.
Exactly. You're going to need those more because you're still going to be the caregiver.
Right.
There's still going to be things that you have to do that it's not going to suddenly stop. When the person gets well, you're still going to need that. So take advantage of those resources. Your resources might change from acute, that you may not need the acute resources in that moment, but you may need more supportive things, and you may need more softer types of services, but it's still there. And many times we forget about the person. That this brings up two things. The person gets better, we forget about the caregiver. Oh, everything's better now. So Sally's all
it's over with, right?
That's not true. Sally needs you now more than ever. Or
right.
In the case of grief, is what I found, is people don't know how to respond to grief. And so they didn't know what to say, so they actually leave because they're afraid that they didn't respond quick enough, or they didn't say the right thing, or they didn't know what to do. So we actually separate ourselves from that person. And I found that happen and had to really work through my process of, why did these people leave me? Why are they no longer here?
Mm-hmm.
Come to find out, they didn't know what to do. They didn't know what to say. So it was better to just distance themselves. So it's so interesting that we all have to walk through observing our friends and being with our friends and family. We all walk through our own version of it ourselves. The more we can be aware of our emotions, and the more we can learn how to be with them, how to deal with them, how to understand them, the more supportive we can be and the more clarity we have for ourselves.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And there are just so many aspects to this entire process, it seems, before, after, during, you know, no matter, it seems like every stage. The key, though, is acting out of love and compassion to be supportive. I mean, that just seems to come
Absolutely.
Through the most powerfully. Now, as we are heading into the last couple minutes, so I want to give you the opportunity, Christine, to tell us about any upcoming events. I think you still have one upcoming, and also, again, where people can find your website. They can see it on the show page, but go ahead and speak to that really quickly so people know.
I will be in Salem on Sunday, April 29th, and I will be speaking at the 11 o'clock service. And then afterwards, I will be facilitating a workshop called A Walk of Faith, exactly about this topic. It's about the topic of being caregiver and moving through transition. And I was blessed to be able to do a pilgrimage as part of my grief process. So I'll be sharing about that at it's the Woodland Chapel Church, and you can go to my website, which is sacredheartministries.org, and you can find details about that workshop and also other upcoming events that I'm doing. The book I've written for caregivers is called Anatomy of Caring, Insights on Faith for a Caregiver and a Patient. It's available at bookstores online and locally. And then, again, for caregivers, I have a blog called anatomyofcaring.wordpress.com. And it's on there are resources and tips for caregivers. I think I covered everything.
No, you did. And I just want to thank you again for being with us today, Christine. It is such a joy to talk with you. And I love the way our conversations flow. And, you know, I would welcome you on again sometime if you're willing to come on again in the future, because I think that you really have a wonderful message to share. And I just want to express my gratitude to you and to the universe, God, spirit, however one might express it, for bringing you to us, because you really are a wonderful person to chat with. I mean, let me just say
that.
Oh,
thank you, Susan. Well, Susan, I want to thank you because you're offering such a great venue for people to learn more about their spirituality and to learn more about these things. So thank you for having me on and for all that you are offering. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And I look forward to learning so much more about your work, since I'm fortunate enough to be in this area where you do a lot of things, and yet I know you also do things outside of the Pacific Northwest. So I want people to be aware of that if you would like Christine to speak in some other area of the country or even the world, I assume you're open to opportunities.
Yes, I am.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, thank you again, and I hope everyone out there has a wonderful day, and just stay in that space of love. I just want to remain in that message that Christine shared with us today, is to just find that space of love and support and peace, no matter what you're encountering in your life today, whether it's joy, grief, challenge. Just be in that space as much as you can, that space of love and faith. Thank you again.
Thank you.